Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Craft of the Draft podcast. The regular season is finished and it's the exciting part of the year where we move into finals. But I haven't done a question for a while, so I've got a good question for you today as the regular season finishes. Geelong finished on top for the boys, so congrats to their minor premiers. And for the girls, it was Oakley, two games ahead. But my question is looking at Play HQ. If you don't know what that is, it's pretty much where the fixtures are, but it's where the coaches put the best players and things like that, right? And as a result, you know, you can go to the ladder part or statistics part and it's got best players and it tells you how many times a player has been named in the best. Now, I've got the question for you. Which top five for the boys and girls do you think, well, who do you think finished in the top five for the boys and girls? And it's an interesting question because it was quite tight. So there was an outright leader for the boys who was in the best 11 out of 13 games, which is quite impressive. For the girls, there were an equal top five, but there was one girl who had, I think it was 11 out of 13 as well, whilst the rest had 11 out of 14. So, without further ado, give me your guesses. Who was the top five for the boys to start?
Yeah, you gave me about 90 seconds of notice, so I've quickly come up with a few predictions. So I'll start with the boys.
Yeah.
I'll give you who I think's in the top five, then you can say yes or no at the end.
Yeah.
So I've gone Charlie Orchard, an interceptor from Dandenong. Pat Sedd, an aerobic machine from the Calder Cannons. Eden Ibbotson, a hardworking midfielder from Geelong. Noah Hibbins Hargreaves, the bottom major from the Rays, and Connor Ling from Tassie Devils. How many of those did I get?
So
right?
You were two out of five. You got Charlie Orchard. I knew Ibbotson, I had to, right?
Yeah.
So the one who was in first was Lockie Jakes.
Oh, okay.
He finished first. Yep. Luke Kennedy from the Sandy Dragons was the one Metro player.
Yep.
And Ollie Hannaford as well. So glad to see that. For the girls, who's your guesses?
For the girls, my guesses are Gemma Reynolds and Kayla Dalgleish from the Dandenong Stingrays midfield, Alice Stoddart from the Gippy Power, Bella Davies, Grace Ballany and Lou Painter.
You're only one out of five there.
Really?
Which I'm surprised.
Grace Ballany is the one?
No, it was Gemma Reynolds.
Okay.
Was the one. Priya Bowring.
Yeah, I conceded her.
Jordan Allen was the one Metro.
Yep.
Jamaica Douglas was from Bendigo. And then Elise Cook, who you did say before I heard you say, but I didn't say anything. She was the other one. So congrats to those five girls. Shows a bit of consistency. But maybe for the boys, does that mean Lockie Jakes is a good shout for the, what's the medal again?
The
Morrish medal. Because that sometimes is a decent indication, but obviously coaches do think differently. Their mindset is tactically a lot of the time.
They certainly do look at structure a lot more than what umpires would. But no, we'll get into our talking points this weekend. And we watched a fair bit of footy across both the days. And I think a big discussion to come out of the weekend was the number one pick discussion. It's been obviously a hot topic all year, as it is every year, but quite open this year. And we saw the return of Finn O'Sullivan on Sunday for the Oakley Chargers after a game at Richmond. And he's obviously had an injury interrupted year, but he was an outstanding asset for them, particularly in the first quarter, and really set up that win. Jagger Smith continued his strong form. Levi Ashcroft and Murphy Reid a little bit quieter. Harvey Langford, 33 disposals and 4 goals in a sterling midfield forward performance for the Dandenong Stingrays. And Josh Smiley, you watched him, he returned to form a little bit as well. So I think it's worth having a little bit of a discussion at the end of the regular season about where we see all of these players sit. Nathan, I'll throw to you first.
Yeah, well, we'll obviously touch on this as the draft gets closer and there's still finals to go. So a fluid conversation. Foss's return does make you turn your head. You're like, wow, that was that type of impact. And what did he finish with? 18 touches, three goals.
Yep.
So that type of impact, I think, is different to what a Smiley or a Jagger do. They're usually, that's wind if you're hearing that sound in the background. There's no one at our door. But Jagger and Smiley, I feel like they're both able to rack it up. Jagger's form at the moment would suggest he's at number one. Can we agree with that?
I think if you're looking at form and form alone, I'd say that. But yeah, Finn O'Sullivan probably needed some big games at the back end of the season just to remind people of his skill set. And I think, he showed up. He stood up when it really mattered for Oakley on Sunday. His nous, his cleanliness and his decision-making was absolutely outstanding. And also his hard running and polish. So I think you look at all these midfielders and you think, what's their frailty? I don't think Finn O'Sullivan has a frailty. Obviously, we've talked all year about the fact he's probably the most balanced player in the draft when you look at midfielders. It's just been an injury-interrupted journey, and he shows how high impact per possession he is. Jagger Smith, I think he's one who, like you said, he is certainly in the best form, but is he a high floor, low ceiling sort of player in that you know what you're going to get, but it's almost a safe pick in some ways just because of the fact that he doesn't have the size, doesn't have that real point of difference, but he's got that unrelenting competitiveness. He'll probably be a future leader of your club.
I mean, Richmond having number one, who would you take right now? I would lean towards Jagger. I guess on the trajectory of their club as well, they're likely to get another top three pick in the next 2 years as well. I think if you're rebuilding slowly, you take someone like Jagger, who you know is going to be reliable over the next 5 to 10 years. You've already had him in your system as well through the VFL program. I know that's not a direct correlation, but at least he's got some exposure to it. That's where I sit. Where would you go?
Yeah, I would say the same. And that's a surprise because I've been on the Josh Smiley train all year. And I am now starting to get off it. And I think he's still in the conversation, but he'd be a bold choice at this stage because I feel like he's been the ultimate tease this year. He's the player that you want to compare to Patrick Cripps. But you question whether he has the intensity and hunger of a player like that. And at pick one, you want someone who's going to shape the next generation of your football club. And I think we've seen at times this year that there have been question marks about whether he has the intensity and hunger to really swing a game his team's way. And when you're 194 centimetres, you probably need to be doing a little bit more, particularly at Vic Metro level. Having said that, he did start the Coates League season in Stirling.
Well, the question, I mean, we can never comment on his character or something like that. That's the one thing we probably don't have any real good idea of. So in terms of that, he might actually be the type of character that can do that. And we're obviously basing off performance. The one question I want to bring up with him, watching Easton's game on the weekend and watching a lot of Harley during the year is just, you know, general enjoyment, is what's his point of difference now compared to the start of the year? Because when he's shut down with physicality, when the pressure comes on him, I don't feel like his point of difference is found as much. He knows how to get the ball. He was using his strength, but I don't feel like he's been as damaging as he usually is, because teams know how to combat him now. When he went up to half forward, he wasn't really able to take any contested marks. His one goal came from out the back, you know, delivered with a handball over the top. He was still good, and it wasn't a bad performance, but I don't think his impact is felt as much anymore, and that's where I question whether he's at number one. And it feels like we're really just having a go at him here, but we're not, because we know he's still talented. He's still got terrific assets to be a top five player, but I just wonder, like we've seen with Harley at AFL level, when the pressure comes on him and teams know that he's just going to try and bull through you, and that's what he's great at. But when he is stopped at that, he does tend to turn it over a lot. That's what we've noticed with Harley's footy this year, although he still had those magical moments, right? So my question to you is that something that would hinder Smiley at the next level if he's not able to find that little bit of point of difference at the back end?
I think he's explosive. I think he's really explosive as well, and he's got speed that is hard to match, and you can close down his physicality, but if he gets out in space, he can really be damaging. He's obviously a clearance player as well. I do think his marking is still very good, even if he didn't show it on the weekend. So that's probably where I'd sit with him. And then I guess just to round out this conversation, there's obviously Murphy Reid and Levi Ashcroft as well, but do you think Harvey Langford is a genuine pick one contender? Because he's breaking barriers I didn't necessarily think he would. I still don't think he's in that conversation, but at 190 centimetres and with the punchy left foot that he's got, he's certainly got some attributes that some clubs right at the top end would desire.
Yeah, he's a hard one to... I've struggled to see where I sit him, because form would suggest that he deserves to be in that conversation, but I just don't see where he has that real shining, like, excitement X factor about him compared to the top five, because he's just really good at his craft. I feel like that's just, you're getting a player who's really set in what he does. I mean, I see him more as a half forward than a mid. I think his athletic capability to take overhead marks is just, like, incredible, and I feel like his assets would be better used there. I guess he can move into the mid, and I'm sure that will be explored quite early in his AFL career, but I do see him just outside the top five. I guess the lack of speed as well at times might hinder him as
Yeah.
Well, it's a difference, at least, to the other five.
Yeah, and it's not a lack of speed to the point of it being a weakness, but it's a lack of speed when you compare him to the fastest players in the crop. And I think he's one who I've compared to Josh Dunkley, so I probably do see him still as a midfielder forward, but obviously got that overhead marking. And, yeah, his game isn't defined by speed like someone like a Josh Dunkley. But we'll move on to our next talking point, Louis Emmett. He's one who's had a pretty good two-week stretch, was absolutely outstanding in the first half against Sandy after a close-to-best-on-ground performance for Oakley the previous week. He's mobile, he takes contested marks, he's skillful with ball in hand, and he has a very good tank, covers the ground well as well. Yep. My question to you is he a ruck forward at the next level? Now, we've still got 12 more months to see him as a bottom major, or is he a forward who pinch hits in the ruck?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd lean more towards forward ruck.
Yeah.
I don't know, his size, he looks so tall, but he feels like he's just he's still a few centimetres shorter, which is odd because he's still got good height. I think his forward capability, I think the danger he possesses in the forward half, where he's obviously mobile enough not to just be a marking forward, I think you need that. You need to ensure he's in that forward half rather than moving in from the ruck contest and moving in and he's kind of just there as a second option. But that's where I'd see him. I'm assuming you're the same from...
I think so, yeah. I'm probably a little bit undecided. I haven't seen enough of him forward to 100% lock that in, but I do think that his skill set would lend itself to being a centre-half forward who can get up the ground, take marks up the line, but then also be a really good target up there. But having said that, he went toe-to-toe with Flynn Penry last week and beat him and was very competitive against Brody Finlay this week. They're both obviously much bigger than him in the ruck, so very different opponents, and he was able to sort of nullify both of them. The next talking point, the best marking small forwards in the crop. And this comes off the back of watching Oakley 2 weeks in a row. And I think I would sit Jasper Auger at the top of this pack because he flies for absolutely everything. Yeah. And you feel like when there's a high ball coming inside 50 and a pack forms, he's one that doesn't converge at the feet of the pack, but he's one that actually genuinely flies and feels like he's always a chance to, if not mark it, then at least get hands to it. He's absolutely dangerous. And he's the sort of player that probably wouldn't suit to going into a tall forward line because you'd want him to stay down and be really dynamic and get busy at ground level. Someone who is better in an undersized forward line and can take marks a little bit like your Jamie Elliott, who plays a little bit taller than he is. Obviously, that comparison is used probably overly extensively, that Jamie Elliott comparison to players in the draft. But I'd say Jasper Auger is the best marking small forward. I'd put Joe Berry up there as well. And Jesse Dottoli has got a bit of spring about him. But your thoughts?
Well, it's a good time for me to talk about Jesse Dottoli and his performance, but I'd have to agree with Jasper Auger in that sense. I was pretty critical on his start through the year. I just thought he wasn't producing enough and didn't feel like his impact was ever felt in those first couple of weeks. But ever since his country campaign, he's been superb. Like, finding space is one thing, but able to capitalize on getting that space, getting that separation and using the footy well. I mean, he converts. He converts his opportunities, which I think makes him super dangerous as well. On the Jesse Dottoli side of things, who he was terrific against Eastern, and when things were looking pretty dire in that first half, his involvement was awesome. I mean, it felt like he was in all thirds of the grounds. Obviously, we know he's most deadly in that forward 50, which is where he was in the end. He had 3 goals to finish the game, but he was so agile. His decision-making in order to get himself into spots, I've always said this one thing, he's probably the craftiest in terms of he just sneaks into space without you actually noticing. And I think that's probably the point of difference with him compared to Olga. I think he does it a little more easier than Olga. Not to say Olga doesn't do it at all. Definitely does. But I'd say Dottoli's just got a great sense of understanding when to impact space and when to move into it. His ability to spin out of traffic. I wrote down here his understanding, it's a long sentence, his understanding of body mechanics being the way he knows how to contort his body really well to get out of pressure on him and tackles, which sounds like a stupid statement, but it's something he's really got a nick of and he's so hard to take down. So it's that forward craft that makes him dangerous, not with his marking. You know, at ground level, he's really potent, but just feels like across the ground, he's got
threat everywhere. So you'd say with Jasper Auger, he could take a contested mark. Jesse Dottoli's marking is more so down to his ability to find space with his smarts inside 50. Okay, no, interesting. Next topic, James Barrett and Alex Tarrou. I had a really good chat to Alex Tarrou actually last week. I wrote a story on him for the Pakenham Gazette. We'll put that on our story in the next couple of days. A really likable, laid-back Gippslander who looks like he's going to go in the first round now. He's playing some really strong footy down back and even been swung forward. But I wanted to compare him to James Barrett, because I was having a think about this after I had a chat to him, and Alex Tarrou is the one who has been labelled the bolter. There's always a player in every draft class that's labelled as the bolter, and he's got that really good size about him. He's competitive. He's a contested mark. He reads the play. He intercepts. He can go forward as well, and he tackles hard. And I think all of those traits are also true of James Barrett, and James Barrett is 3 centimetres taller. Why are we talking about Alex Tarrou in this great regard? As we should, because he's been a very good footballer, but James Barrett seems to be flying under the radar.
Yeah, well, from my point of view, I've obviously watched less of Barrett than I think I have. I think I've watched both equally, just at different points of the year, I feel like. I feel like I've watched a lot of Barrett earlier in the year, haven't seen him as a lot in the back half, and vice versa with Tarrou. I feel like with Tarrou, it's just his athleticism is...
Yeah.
Really felt further up the ground. Barrett has been forced to play a lot more of a lockdown role, which I think has limited his ability to show that athleticism further up the ground, moving forward in transition. Tarrou's been moved around quite a lot more. Barrett started up forward.
Then went down back,
but he's never really got given the chance to go up forward again because, I mean, he was inaccurate to start. I think that definitely hurt his chances earlier in the year.
Barrett also never been through the midfield, which Tarrou has.
Yes.
Played on
so
Smiley.
It's just, I do think versatility is making a difference at the moment. Barrett probably won't go through the midfield. But Tarrou is just, I think it's just opportunity. Not to say that Barrett hasn't been performing as well. I think he's obviously been impressing with that, you know, with the change going down back. But Tarrou's just had the opportunity and he's capitalizing. It's just getting eyes on him. I don't think it's a really harsh comparison because, and obviously you've seen more of Barrett, so you touch on a bit more of the difference with Barrett.
The only thing I'll say about Barrett is I think his kicking can be a little bit more haphazard than what Alex Tarrou's is, and I did see that on the weekend. There are a few kicks that, he would have liked to have had back, but he was a mark machine on the weekend. It felt like Murray, at times, they got really good supply inside 50, and what was really impressive about his performance on the weekend, and I think is going to really hold him in good stead when it comes draft time, is we've seen him intercept and able to come off, peel off third man across. He was locking down Josh Murphy, and he did lock down Josh Murphy, kept him to 0-3, two of Josh Murphy's 3 shots were from outside 50, and he probably made the wrong decision in going for goals on both occasions, but he got frustrated by James Barrett, so he did an outstanding job to lock him down, but then to also have the understanding and decision-making to come off and impact aerially when the ball was in a position for him to do so has been really impressive as well. Alex Tarrou is one who, spent a couple of weeks up forward, and I think there were some people saying, oh, why is he playing up forward? And Gippsland is saying, well, he's our best forward when he's up there. Like, he's got that much X factor that wherever you play him, he seems to be the best player. So, I think they're both very good players. I hope they both go in the national draft. Another one I just want to touch on from that game, Liam Heatherton kicked 3 goals in the first quarter, finished with 3-3. Very good bottom major. He's a key forward. He's a marking forward. He was up there with Jack Whitlock, Josh Murphy, and Matt Whitlock at times in the back half of this season as well, and he's still been able to be a real presence for them. He's contested marking really strong. He played well in the 17s game, kicked 5 goals, and he moves really well as well. He's mobile. I think he's one to watch for next year. With his size, he's one that's generating plenty of discussions. And then players that we've been sleeping on, Nathan, I think Ollie Warburton and Gabriel Stumpf both fit into this discussion. I'll speak about Ollie Warburton in a second. I think he was clearly best on ground for Murray. He got a go for Collingwood's VFL side as well, but if you want to have a chat about Gabriel Stumpf, who you watched in the forward line for Northern against Eastern on the weekend?
Yeah, I think it was his moments that impressed me. I don't think his overall impact was felt across the 4 quarters as it probably could have been. But again, Northern didn't have a lot of the footy up forward, especially in that first half. But I thought his craftiness up forward is an element we haven't seen a lot of, or we didn't get to see it at least in the championships. His ability to kind of maneuver around opponents, be really clean at ground level, which I thought was quite critical to his game to make sure he had an impact inside forward 50. I think the things that are elevating him a little bit more is he's not that key marking forward. He's probably that second or third that you can rely on, and obviously didn't get a lot of opportunity in front of goal, but it was his ability to impact you know, without scoring opportunities that I thought that made him at least open my eyes to him a little more and showed his impact, especially when things weren't going their way. I'd like to see it happen again this weekend, which we'll touch on again. They'll play Eastern in the wild card, but just one I think that's worth keeping an eye on. Obviously, Northern could have as little as one game to go, so it's not a lot to work with, but I hope he's able to show very similar in this in whatever, however many games they've got left.
Absolutely. And then from Ollie Warburton's perspective, yeah, I think we probably haven't talked about him enough, but on the weekend, 24 disposals, felt like he got a lot more than that. We know how clean he is in the contest. His stoppage stuff is really, really strong. It always has been. And he showed what he was able to do at VFL level as well. He played off half back for Vic Country and accumulated a fair bit of the ball. What he has done well in the last couple of times I've watched him is probably that overlap run and getting those handball receives, being able to get it on the outside and then really damage with his disposal as well. So I think he's a player who, yeah, offers a little bit more than just being a stoppage beast. And we know that those sort of players, you know, you probably need a little bit more. You need to have that inside-outside balance. And I think I've seen that a bit more from him in recent times. And he's got that ability to have some presence in the back half as well and really set the game up. So I think that's been really impressive to see in recent times. Just worth touching on some other players that we've watched this weekend that we thought played well. Tom Gross, I think it's, he was really good on the weekend, probably behind Finno Sullivan and Jagger Smith. Blake Lidler's game you really liked, Nathan?
Yeah, certainly did. He's one that, you know, you've been massive on. I'll give you credit. You've been on him all year and I've slowly built to enjoy. I still can't completely get on board that he's a draftable player. I think he's just great at what he does. I'm not sure if it transfers at the next level, but his body work, his intercepting, that speed and burst he can produce through the corridor, I thought was really instrumental for Oakley on the weekend.
Yeah, and speed out of the back half. And I think someone else who did that was Colin Ainsworth from Murray. Their ability to really break the game open, take some running bounces, use the corridor and their leg speed. I think that's something that's really important in the modern game. Colin Ainsworth generating a little bit of interest with that. But Blake Lidler, yeah, certainly. And he's got an ability to be really good deceptively overhead as well. So, no, it was good to see him play a really good game. He's obviously locked down some opponents in Jack Girardi and Ollie Hannaford in the last couple of weeks as well. After Ollie Hannaford had a hot start on a different opponent a couple of weeks ago. Luke Kennedy, quite good in a losing cause. Archie Butler made his debut and kicked 3 goals. Had some really nice moments as well. Ned Byrne, quite good defensively for Murray. And then from an Eastern Rangers perspective, Remy McLean kicked a few goals. Lockie Doveston and Jordan Hyder both played well as well.
Yeah, enjoyed all their games. I guess Eastern's offensive output was quite good. And it was just a forwards day in general.
Yep, no, very good. Now, we'll move to our power rankings now. So we will rank the top 8 teams, and this is done without necessarily looking at the fixtures that these teams have. It's the best team, I guess, and going down from that. Now, we won't necessarily see these 8 teams reach the quarterfinals because fixtures might not allow it, but we'll go from 8 to 1, Nathan, and I'll start with my 8th ranked team, and it's the Eastern Rangers. And I think they've got an underrated back line. I think they've got Andrew Barker back there who intercepts really well. Xavier Taylor obviously got that 17s game. Jack Baldwin's very good one-on-one. And they've also got Riley White, who wins his contests as well. But I think their back line's really good, and they've got firepower in the middle. The return of Cody Anderson really helps them. Obviously, well, got Christian Moraes.
Can I just ask quickly, how are your rankings being done? What's yours based on? Because mine is purely off how likely they are to win the premiership in this next 4 weeks, really.
It's a combination of form and
Probably
the cool. same. Yeah, we're doing it the same.
My part. 8 is Tassie.
Yep.
They're a real wild card in this. I just think their top end talent is not as high as anyone else above them, but not to say they're not as challenging as any team. They could easily make it to a prelim final, and they are pretty good at doing that. Over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and my number 7's Tassie for those reasons that it's really hard to place them. They're really well coached down there. They play with a great team spirit that some of the other teams don't replicate as well, and that really comes to the fore in finals. They don't have, like you said, the top-end talent, but they've got a really hardened midfield and a fleet-footed forward line.
Called as my 7, I think they're really stiff given they finished first in Metro. They're definitely in the best form in the Metro Conference. But I do worry if their top end can stack it against the other against Sandy or Oakley pretty much, and it will be tested on the weekend against Oakley.
Similar to the unluckiness is Geelong. I've got them as my number six, despite them...
Same, yeah, just before you continue.
Yeah, despite them being the first in country, being the only team that gets the bye this weekend. They do feel low. They're very well coached and well drilled. They've got a nicely balanced midfield, probably like a little bit of size in there, but Xavier Ivasic, Eden Ibbotson both work really hard, and I've liked their seasons. But in terms of being able to really capitalise and punish opponents up forward, I'm not sure if they've got that. I do like Cooper Ward, but yeah, I think that real firepower holds them back.
Well, it's similar. I mean, they only scored 39 points against Sandy, so it's that's who you're going to have to really go through to get to win a premiership. So I do find, and even against Rebels, I think they won with 73 points. So they're not a massive scoring team, and I just wonder if that will win them a premiership. I've got Eastern at five, which I think, again, it's just top-end talent. I think that can get you through to a grand final. I do wonder on form, though. There are things that don't seem to click at times, it feels like, watching Eastern. I mean, they're up by 44 points, and that got reduced to 10 points, and I don't know. It was a game where I think they knew they were going to play each other the next week, so they didn't really leave it all out there, but I don't have them in my top four for reasons I'll explain, but they're at my five. I
spoke to someone from Eastern a couple of weeks ago and sort of said people underestimated the loss of Trembath and Hillary Smith, obviously. I think mid-season, they're obviously really relying early in the season on 19-year-olds. I've got Calder, number five. I think the reason I've got them a little bit higher is they might not have the top-end talent of some other teams, but they've got the continuity, and they didn't lose as many players to Schoolboys. And I think their top liners all offer something a little bit different. So Nash King is that ball hunter. Damon Hollow is that electric, speedy player. Jaden Ewan has got that speed as well, but he's also got some other attributes to him. And Pat said is the sort of player that can really stand up in pressure moments because of how hard he works.
I think the loss of Kakko, though, is a loss of three goals. That's something that I think will make a really big difference in games where it is decided by under, you know, five goals. That is that type of play they need.
I don't think we've mentioned on the podcast a syndesmosis injury is going out for the rest of the year.
Yeah, true. I've got Dandenong at four, purely based off form. They just play so well together. And when you've got someone like Harvey Laneford, who literally, no, he doesn't carry him on their back at all because they're quite, they spread the load out. But obviously, he's the one that just lifts them each week, along with Cooper Hines. And then you've got a back line that's pretty dynamic there in Kane Hurst and Charlie Orchard, who feel like they stand up every week.
Mm.
You've got Jordan Doherty, who's just performing and giving shifts every week, where he feels like he's so dynamic that you don't know what you're going to get from him, but it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Then you've got your bottom ages like Noah Hibbins-Hargreaves in there that have just produced every single week. I think they're a real dark horse in this conference. I think they finish second, so they do have a pretty good run if they were to get to the prelim.
Yeah, and I've got them at number four as well. And for me, it's the same sort of thing, but it's the emergence of, like you said, that second layer of talent. And I think they're pretty impenetrable in that back line as well, that's been led so expertly by Charlie Orchard this season. But yeah, I think, Cooper Hines and Harvey Laneford, if it's even with 10 minutes to go, you can just count on one of them to really stand up with the game on the line. At number three for me is GWV. It's going to be great to see them unite the guns, and it has been great to see them unite the guns in the last few weeks. It's a team of match winners when you think of Ollie Hannaford, Reece Unwood, Sam Lawler. Jack Oro is starting to really emerge through the midfield as well. But probably the one thing that holds them back from me putting them a little bit higher is their back line.
Okay, so who's at your two? Is Oakley at your two?
Oakley's number two.
Okay, so mine's Oakley 3, GWV 2. And that's purely because Rebels beat them. Then that's what I think is, that'll be massive if they do play again. I actually don't think they can possibly meet unless it's a grand final, because they're both
opposite.
They'd both get to a prelim as number two most likely. So they would never, they'd only play each other in a granny. But I don't know. I just think GWV as a team, they just bond together quite well. Oakley's win against Sandy does make me question this. Because would GWV beat Sandy? I don't think so. Oakley can beat them. I think Oakley have more of the weapons to beat someone like a Sandy. And this is the debate we keep having. Who's going to challenge Sandy? It's one of these two teams, isn't it? It's more likely Oakley than the Rebels.
So, okay, let's actually have a bit of fun with this. I'll give you 60 seconds to really go into depth.
We're already, 30 minutes in.
I'll give you 60 seconds about why you think GWV can do it. Then I'll go for 60 seconds about why I think Oakley is the biggest challenger. Go.
God. Well, you look at the mid, you got Sam Lawler in there who's just going to beast through everyone. You've got players in form like Ollie Hannaford. Jonty Ford's dangerous up forward as well. God, you made me think of the cuff and I forget all their names. Down back, it feels like they're pretty dynamic. They can defend tall and small, but they are not as well suited to the talls. So that is where they let down at times. I'm actually totally blank. This is how hard this is. Why do I forget half their players' names? You just go with Oakley. Trust me, I've literally blanked thinking about half their players.
I think from an Oakley perspective, what I'm gonna say is I just think that Jagger and Finn O'Sullivan as a 1-2 combo in the midfield is the only 1-2 combo that can rival Levi Ashcroft and Murphy Reid. I don't think anyone else has the star power to do that. I think Oakley has a really balanced backline. They've got Liam Callaghan, who has shut down Jonty Fall, who has shut down Harry Armstrong in recent weeks, and then they've got the smaller backliners like your Tom Wenzels and your Blake Lidlers, who can really come off. Tom Wenzels' incisive kicking has been so important for them. Blake Lidlers' rebounding really good on the weekend. And I just feel like I look through the entire Oakley team and I think every single player is either going to play AFL or going to play VFL. So their second line of talent is really hard to beat as well. And I think up forward, they've got some really good markers as well. Quinn Mackay's emerged. Zach McCarthy's played some good games. Charlie Richardson's got the work rate. Jasper Auger plays taller than he is. Kane Emery at their feet. And Noah Uzay is strong and powerful as well. But I just think their spread and depth is really hard to match. And then they've got the top line talent as well.
True. Okay, Jacko, Reece Unwin, Harry Charlson, got to mention them. Don't know how I forgot all of them. Floyd Burmeister's in good form as well. I mean, I'm purely basing that off. They've beaten Oakley, so they at least know how to beat them. But like I said, it's unlikely it's going to happen. And Sandy at one for both of us.
Yeah, for obvious reasons.
But I guess they did just lose to Oakley. I understand that. There could have been a little incentive in there, but we won't talk about, as you know, Calder now play Oakley, which we, let's be honest, Oakley's a more beatable opponent. I mean, Calder's a more beatable opponent than Sandy for Oakley. So they would have had to play 2 weeks in a row and Oakley would have been knocked out completely. But I don't know, if they had to play again, I'd still probably back Sandy. But let's go into our tips for wildcard and move into the girls' finals preview. So I'll be at this triple header on Saturday at Ballarat. Long day of footy. Calder and Oakley. So this is first v 6. Yes. So Oakley have to win to go through. A loss, then they're gone.
Yeah. Calder effectively, yeah, go through either way.
Yeah, Calder go through, yeah, regardless.
But, I will tip Oakley.
I think it'd be rude to really underrate Calder here. I think it'll be closer than what it seems, but I think Oakley, I mean, when you're playing literally in an elimination final each week, you've got so much to lose, literally. So Oakley, Eastern and Northern in a repeat of last week.
The Rangers.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, Northern were competitive, but they just don't have that edge on them. And then Sandy Western, which, let's be honest, will probably not be that great based off the depth of talent is just too large.
Yeah.
Sandy in that. On the Sunday, the country games, Gippy and Murray.
Murray.
Yes, Murray as well. Xavier Lindsay's out, so that's
a big loss.
That's a massive loss. These are all elimination for the country. For Metro, it is the highest ranked loser goes through as a lucky loser. Tassie play Rebels in Tassie. This is controversial. Now, it could just be Vic bias being like, oh, that's not fair. They get to play in Tassie. They do have to travel a lot more than the rest.
And Tassie did finish higher.
So, yeah, and the girls had this last year, but they were the away team, so that was a little dodgier, I feel like. But this one, at least they finished higher. So this makes it a really 50-50 all of a sudden.
And I'd back Tassie, which is really sad because obviously you rate the Rebels a touch higher than I do, but I still think the Rebels should be prelim finalists, but they just didn't quite bank enough wins throughout the year.
I know, and that's going to hurt them in the end. I love the Rebels, but I think going over there and winning is just too much to ask. And then Dandy and Bendigo. So can Bendigo snap an 11-game losing streak?
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. I've got blind faith for one more week.
Seriously, this is just a... Oh, you know what? You can have a bloody 5-minute segment next week talking about the win if they get up. And obviously, I've got Dandy. So let's move to the girls. And now this week was not... it was really weird because the Metro side got changed. Now, if you listen last week, our tips were completely different to the games that were played. So they changed it where Oakley and Eastern played first, second, but it didn't actually mean anything because Oakley had first and Eastern had second. It was literally just a game for the sake of having a game.
Yeah.
And obviously, if top talent playing against each other. Now, Oakley actually had a massive comeback. in the fourth quarter, and they kicked 27-0 to win by 5 points. So assuming that's going to be our grand final, it's likely to that will match up again later in the year. That is a very interesting result. Northern and Sandy played off for pretty much who plays Oakley or Eastern. So yep. Northern won by a point, which based off Oakley's form, I mean Sandy's form, is quite an impressive result, but it was 6-15 to 8-2. So kicking might tell a bit of the story there. So Northern will now play Eastern, Sandy will play Oakley, and Western and Calder just played. 5th v 6th is just a bit of a, again, just to play each other and get one more game into the season. In the countryside, Gippy and Dandy, that was a Dandy won that pretty convincingly. And when we checked, I think it was Dandy up by 3 points and they ended up.
Yeah, no, Gippy started really well, just out and kicked 3 goals in the first quarter. But then from there, they weren't able to hit the scoreboard.
And then Murray got their first win, which is awesome. The whole year just feels like they were so close and never could really get over the line. But they did the job 7-8-55 to 5-3-33 against Bendigo. I think it's just worth bringing up and going through some stats for this because it is a really impressive result. Ali Hall, 39 touches, a massive day out, 8 tackles and 5 marks. Holly Egan with 25 touches. On the goal on the scoreboard, Majella Day with 3 goals, Eliza Roche with 2 goals, had 2-5 and probably could have had more in the end. And then Geelong beat Rebels. So Gippy and Dandy will play each other next week.
Yep.
And then Tassie will play Geelong. So let's just kind of, it'll be next week as there's the 17s girls futures games, which we'll touch on next week. I just want to preview quickly, I guess, where you think each team sits in this conversation and who's most likely to be a threat to Oakley. That's probably the conversation like we have with the boys with Sandy. And
I'd put Eastern and Dandenong on level playing fields as being second and third best team. Now, the fixturing means Eastern is the more likely team to qualify for the grand final and really get the opportunity to challenge Oakley. But I think it's really hard to assess which out of Eastern and Dandenong is better. The most recent time they played each other, the conditions were absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it was down at
Frankston. Yeah, so I don't know which one of those two teams is stronger. It would have been great to see them play each other in dry conditions at full strength, which we didn't see this year. I think the first time they played each other, there was trials or something along those lines, so players were missing.
Yes, yeah, I was at that one. So the way it will work is 1st v 4th, 2nd v 3rd in both conferences, and then it will mix over in the prelims, which is likely to be, we'll obviously do our tips next week, but it is likely to be Oakley v Tassie, which I think in itself is quite an interesting game. I think Tassie are completely the biggest dark horse out of everyone above Dandenong, I reckon. And then Dandy would have to go through Eastern and most likely Oakley to win a premiership, which I think was the issue last year. To do that twice is a massive task. To beat Eastern the first time and to beat Oakley. Can they do it? Who do you think out of Dandy or Tassie, who's more likely to beat their prelim opponent?
Just given the way the fixturing is, I think Dandy would play Oakley in the prelim, or Dandy would play
Eastern? Dandy would play Eastern.
Then Dandenong,
Well, I'd almost argue Tassie because
they did challenge Oakley earlier in the year. And
Oakley were missing from memory, but Oakley they only won by... I can't find it, but I think they won by 5 points. That was in Tassie as well. I think their bottom age talent definitely is on par with Oakley's. That's the one thing I think Oakley would be a little bit nervous about. I just wonder, I don't think their top end matches. So their top age talent would match it. That's where I think they'd be let down. The only thing is as well, Dandenong haven't beaten Eastern all year, I think that's going to hurt them, I guess, psychologically. Can they find that edge to beat them? I think they've never been ahead against them as well. They always fall behind and they're always playing catch up. So I guess that's a matter of that. If you had to predict a final winner to round out the podcast, who's going all the way for the girls?
Oakley.
Hard to see them losing. Eastern's result on the weekend really makes me question now. Again, there would be a repeat. I think Oakley just have that psychological edge now. They've beaten them too many times for Eastern to just get up and pull off an upset. So I'd say Oakley as well. But that wraps it up. Next week, we'll go through, we will watch every single wildcard game for the boys. So we'll obviously touch on every game and the key talking points from that. And then we'll recap the girls' futures game as well that's happening on the weekend. And then it's fully into finals from there. So thank you all for watching. Make sure to check out our socials for more content during the week. And we'll see you in another episode.